Welcome to the Independent Curriculum Group's Partner Podcast. The Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast highlights the work of our partner schools in the development of contemporary education as they embrace and enact the ICG's principles of independent curriculum, which you can find on our homepage at independentcurriculum.org. The Independent Curriculum Group is a consortium of over 150 schools around the world interested in building stronger, more effective programs. The ICG helps schools envision, design, implement, and evaluate school-generated, mission-aligned curriculum. Because independent curriculum is created in individual schools by teachers to serve their very own students, independent curriculum is innovative by definition. We hope that you will find this podcast both interesting and inspiring, and we hope that you will subscribe to our entire Partner Podcast series. Welcome to this episode of the Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao, Executive Director of the ICG and host of the Partner Podcast. Today we're talking with Larry Kahn, Chief Technology Officer at Trinity Valley School in Fort Worth, Texas. Larry, thank you for joining us for the ICG Partner Podcast. It's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Peter. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So, as am I. So, Larry, can you tell us a little bit about Trinity Valley School, just to get us started, please? How old the school is, a little about the students, mission, values, that kind of thing?
Sure. The school was founded in 1959 when George Bragg and Stephen Zeleny decided they needed to provide the young men at that time of the Texas Boys Choir with an opportunity to learn as well as rehearse. On a tour of Europe, Bragg and Zeleny realized that such things as the signing of the Magna Carta and the crowning of Charlemagne meant absolutely nothing to the boys. While at the same time, they realized the boys could memorize Beethoven, Bach, and Mozart and perform it wonderfully. So they figured if they could do that, they could certainly learn. So they founded a liberal arts school with a handful of male students. Stephen Zeleny, who'd been born in Hungary in 1928, fled Europe with his family as a young child. Happily, he is still with us, and he still speaks about his experience as a child and the importance of children having a liberal arts education so that they learn to question.
Wow.
Since the founding, the school has grown to become a K-12 non-denominational co-ed day school. This year, it looks like we're going to have about 980 students. The four pillars of the school are fine scholarship with its fulfillment at college, the development of wide constructive interest, intelligent citizenship, and spiritual and moral development, which promotes lasting values.
And I imagine music performance program is pretty good too, still. What a great story. So, Larry, how did you come to be at Trinity Valley? Can you tell us a little bit about your path to the school and the work you're doing there now?
Sure. I was recruited by Don North, who'd been my head of school and boss at the Kincaid School in Houston. And after Don retired from Kincaid, he took an internship headship at Trinity Valley. And he told me that TVS was a great school. And he was creating a much-needed chief technology officer position, and he wanted to see if I'd be interested. So I applied, I visited the school, and what I saw to me confirmed Dom's assessment that it's a great school with great people. And then I also had the opportunity to Skype with and later meet Ian Craig, who had been hired as the current head of school. And we hit it off very well and continue to have a great working relationship. My role is to oversee really three primary things: the academic technology program, the information technology program, and the operational technology of the school. I serve on the school's administrative team and report directly to Ian Craig, the head of school. I'm just starting my second year here. My focus my first year has been on learning the school's culture, building trusting relationships with all of my colleagues and constituents, partnering with my team to define our roles, because two of us are new, improve our service to the school, shore up our IT infrastructure. And I've been doing a lot of listening to our students, to our teachers, to our colleagues, and our parents. I formed a technology advisory committee, surveyed teachers about their likes and concerns, and made it a habit to wander the campus before school to meet with teachers personally, to speak with them. We've also assembled a group of upper school students with an interest in technology, and they have helped us greatly in our work with parents by having terrific conversations with parents about teens and technology use that had followed up a showing of the film Screenagers that had been brought on by the Parents Association, and those conversations were incredibly helpful. The students have also helped with a middle school program. The middle schools tied in with the TEDx Youth Fort Worth organization, which is both independent and public school. It's a community organization of TEDx talks given exclusively by youth, and those students helped out with that. And we took steps to improve the school's one-to-one middle school iPad program. And lastly, we sponsored a community event, an Invent-to-Learn workshop with Gary Steger for both public and independent schools. And we hosted our accrediting organization's, the ISAS Annual Technology Conference.
So other than that, you haven't really got a lot done. Wow.
Well, we started a laptop program for faculty as well.
Wow. So it's really about, well, we're going to talk a little bit more about your work a little later on, but I love to hear how you're working and how the school is working to understand the role of technology within the culture of the school and the school's culture of learning. I think that's so important, and the fact that you've been so inclusive, and I love the early morning walkabout, which I think is a neglected tool for people to get to know their own schools well. So I applaud you for doing that. One thing I want to focus on today is how Trinity Valley, in its own words, develops 21st century thinkers, and then how this work represents aspects of what we call independent and innovative educational practice at Trinity Valley. I'm interested as I look at the website and read the school's materials that quote, makers and, quote, adventurers join scholars, artists, and athletes in the taxonomy of 21st century thinkers that Trinity Valley features on its homepage. So I'm curious to know, how does a school help kids become makers and adventurers, and what kinds of programs support that? And then how does the school assess the progress? This is a huge question. How does the school assess the progress it's making in developing makers and adventurers, as well as how does the school, figure out whether a kid is actually becoming a maker or an adventurer, as well as a scholar, artist, and athlete?
Well, it's a terrific question, Peter, and it addresses something that attracted me to the school so much. There are three programs, one very mature, one less than a decade old, and one brand new. So the three programs are TOE, which were the Trinity Valley Trojans. So TOE stands for Trojan Outdoor Experience. The Global Education Program, and Computer Coding, with really TOE and Global focusing on the adventurer part and the computer coding moving into the maker experience. So the Trojan Outdoor Experience, or TOE, is celebrating its 40th year at Trinity Valley School.
Wow.
It's run by two full-time employees, and annually, this program takes about 80% of the students off campus to explore the natural world. They begin their first overnight on campus right at the start of school, pass through five Texas state parks and multiple national parks in six different states. This year, it culminated with adventures to the rainforests of Costa Rica, the Amazon jungle, and they completed the Inca Trail in Peru. They also have an extensive ropes course on campus, and it's very important that children take part in this program. The Global Initiatives Program as a full-time director. And you know, one thing I've learned, I just said Toe has two FTEs and we have someone in charge of the global program. If you want to be serious, if a school wants to be serious about that, they really got to have that dedicated resource to it. So the global initiative runs K-12, and its mission is to prepare students not just to be tourists, but to become globally connected, conscientious citizens and leaders through virtual and in-person exchanges. The goal is for the students to cultivate global competencies and life skills, cross-cultural communication skills, and have a self-awareness and empathy that leads to cross-cultural, a deep cross-cultural understanding. And over the past just 6 years, Trinity Valley students have connected with students, educators, and others in 56 nations or territories on all seven continents. So that's a way that we make sure that they're getting that adventure component. And then the newest one is the computer coding and making. Whereas it's the newest, it's growing quickly. And what attracts me to it is the focus is not on the gizmos, the 3D printers or laser cutters or the rest of it. But it's really focused on having the kids develop, you know, constructing knowledge and getting that computational thinking mindset and practice, thinking like a designer. And at the same time, as the program grows, the students have access to the devices that can turn their ideas into realities. So right now, 100% of the lower and middle school students learn to code, design, and make. It's also growing to move into the core classes in both the middle and upper school. In the middle school, for example, English students built their own Mad Libs programs to reinforce parts of speech.
Huh.
Fifth graders created and illustrated stories on Scratch, programmed their own games to help them study, and coded works of art using commands to create basic shapes and spirals to deepen their knowledge of geometrical concepts. And that was in a math class. In science classes, they used commands to program insects and label anatomy. And some advanced students program games to actually, gamified learning anatomy for themselves and their peers. Of course, they've had students taking computers apart, programming robots, and that type of thing. And then in art classes, students tinkered with Arduino, servos, potentiometers, and other electronic components and hardware to build drawing machines. And that was new this year. It was a huge hit. And one of the coolest 3D projects, and I think you'll like this, Peter, that the kids were designing boats and racing them on an inflatable raceway. Another project, which kind of tied into some local community service, was designing snowflakes and other holiday ornaments and working with people at a nursing home to get those hung and used. In our upper school, coding classes are still electives, but the classes are extremely popular to the extent that a couple of years ago, the coders presented at the New York City Maker Faire. They traveled there and presented there. And I mentioned last spring, we hosted our ISAS technology conference, and serendipitously, totally serendipitously, it was when some of our upper school students were going to be showing off what they had designed as virtual reality experience. So let me rephrase that, designed and coded. So the attendees to the technology conference, while I was giving the tour of the school, put on the virtual reality headsets and were blown away by what the students had created. And we're working on expanding coding and making from those electives into some of the core science classes at our school. So it's those three things, Peter, the global outdoor education and coding / making programs, K-12, that foster the growth of makers and adventurers. And the leaders of these programs continually work to integrate it into core curriculum classes. And then 2 years ago, I think this helps as well, even though it's not one of these three programs, our lower school did away entirely with letter grades, instead focusing on learning outcomes and prescriptive narratives. The lower school has this exploratorium where work is defined as where K-4 Trojans tinker, fail, rethink, innovate, and experiment to create things and knowledge like scientists. So, you know, having this, building this internal love of learning and tinkering and failing and playing without fear of a letter grade, at least in the lower school, promotes students focusing on learning and being creative, you know, rather than the grade, and which I think helps make them into makers and adventurers.
I'm going to make a little prediction here that is probably already coming into play, and that is that students who are going to be coming from your lower school and your middle school, where they've been doing this work, especially the coding in many kinds of disciplines, are going to provide some interesting both challenges and opportunities to teachers in upper school classes as kids in, you know, 11th grade English have familiarity with Scratch programming or more sophisticated kinds of things. I think that's going to be an exciting evolution as it all continues forward. I think that's it's a great thing, and I am also interested about the dropping of the letter grades. And that's in what, that's just in grades up through six or
up through four.
Okay. that's super. And so I'm going to sort of alter a question that I had and shared with you a little bit, and talk about how this has to do with the initiatives that you are working on, that other people are working on right now, because I think you've outlined a ton of them, and I'm going to ask you to talk maybe a little bit about the role of students in this, because I'm fascinated by the number of student opportunities, as you were sort of enumerating earlier, the things that you've been doing, the number of times you mentioned students involved in planning, committee work, whatever it might be. Is that
sure.
a long-term Trinity Valley thing, or is this an evolving approach to teaching and learning?
I'd say It's a combination of the two, but it's certainly growing. Yeah, there's been some of it. I was a little late for our call because I was coming out of an admin meeting, and one of the things that was being talked about by the division heads was they're looking at growing agency and autonomy for kids, or even trying to grow it further. So to talk about things that we want to do next year, for example, the Trojan Outdoor Experience is exploring the idea of personal choice and outdoor adventure, with the essential question being, how can anyone with any background find something they love about each of our events? You know, they want to personalize that experience as much as possible. In the middle school, they're looking at doing some student leadership committees, doing authentic work that the adults used to do. And the middle school head wants to step down from the assemblies to let the students run it. Seeing similar things in the upper school as well. It's definitely a trend as I look at the opportunities that are happening for next year to give students increased agency and autonomy and personalization of what they're doing.
Absolutely fascinating and so heartening to hear and from so many places the way that people are beginning to ask students questions. I when I went to high school and middle school nearly 50 years ago now, I guess, I think I was probably given one or two choices, and they probably had to do with sports options, and that was about it. Didn't even have a choice of what I was going to eat at lunch. Three bites of everything, no matter what. So that was the adventure. So how things have changed and changed for the better. I'm going to right now stop for a second and identify this podcast to our listeners. This is the Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao, Executive Director of the ICG, and I'm talking today with Larry Kahn of Trinity Valley School in Fort Worth, Texas. So, Larry, Something else I ask everyone is if you could talk a little bit about the ideas, the books, the thought leaders, and the other kinds of resources that have sort of been inspiring Trinity Valley School and that have inspired and guided you and others involved in the work you're doing at Trinity Valley. And you mentioned Gary Steger earlier. So whom have you been reading and listening to and even just thinking about? Who are the voices and what are the big ideas that are making things happen at Trinity Valley, other than a lot of very creative people, obviously?
Well, you know, again, another great question. And one of the things that impressed me was they had designed some new learning spaces at the school. And as I looked at them and read their print publications about what had gone on behind it, it had been greatly inspired by the work of David Thornburg and his book From the Campfire to the Holodeck, which is one of my particular favorites. Wandering the campus, I could tell that in a previous year, John Medina's Brain Rules had been there. This summer, our new head, Ian Craig, reached out to teachers to say, hey, you know, what books speak to you and what would you like your colleagues to read? Of course, you know, that was advisory and he curated it. But, you know, some of the titles that came up were Brené Brown's Daring Greatly, The Innovator's Mindset by George Kuros, Most Likely to Succeed by Tony Wagner and Ted Dintersmith, Punished by Rewards by Alfie Cohn, and other titles as well. And I was just delighted to see that, because a lot of those titles are books that have spoken to me and influenced my thinking as well.
Larry, I've known you for a while and certainly known about you and your work for a while. So I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about your evolving role in the schools where you've worked. And I think you are exemplary, but not necessarily unique in being one of the sort of many folks who had a role in building tech infrastructure at schools years ago, you know, see if the wires work and buy a server, you know, how those folks have become real academic leaders in the development and implementation of innovative teaching and learning practices at their school. Seems to me 20 years ago, and longer than that certainly, there were kind of two ways that schools were looking at technology. One, it's a lot of cool stuff and we're going to buy it and stick it in our classrooms because it looks neat and everybody's doing it and parents on the tours expect to see it. And then two was we think that teaching practices need some improvement here and we can help them evolve, and so we're going to see how technology can help us here. Now, I think in general, we've evolved since 2000 or so from that first cool stuff, and you sort of alluded to that earlier, the cool stuff approach to technology, to the, you know, supporting better teaching and learning. I think we've evolved from the first to the second in most schools. But what's that been like for you? What's been your learning curve on the one hand? And what do you think schools have learned about making technology an effective part of their cultures of learning? You're kind of I'm going to make you a spokesperson here. What have you learned that's mattered the most, do you think?
You know, you summed up a lot of it in your question here, which is, it's about the learning. You know, it's about personalizing that learning. It's about giving that kid agency, each kid agency. You know, we're learning so much. If we back up to the time you were talking about, you know, when I first started in schools and transitioned back into education, it was primarily operational. It was probably the databases or the report cards, attendance, email, you know, things of that nature. But really, with the shifts in technology, Moore's Law, Web 2.0, what began to happen is we began to provide opportunities for connected learning. So, you know, I've talked about constructivism, but I was also, and I took a MOOC about this with the founders of this philosophy. I was influenced greatly by connectivism. Mm-hmm. And the way that we could connect to others in ways that we never did before, and the way that we can collaborate, leveraging tools such as Google Suite for Education, and see how much each learner is taking part in that. And as we're learning about learning and what sticks, for your listeners, if anyone happens to have access to The Economist magazine, there was a great, it's not the current issue, it's last week's issue. It was the cover story. It was, you know, for the first time, we're beginning to see that technology demonstrably can enhance learning. You know, up until that time, everyone said, oh, yeah, it can, but there was no real evidence of that. And while the evidence is being debated, there is evidence, which there hadn't been before. So that's a huge shift. And it wasn't due to the gizmo so much. It was due to the fact that technology has evolved to the point where we can personalize learning in ways that we couldn't before. So I really think that that's where the shift is happening. And the evolution, you know, to sum up 20 years very quickly, has been to focus more on the learning and what truly enhances it. And what do you look at and you get really excited about it and then you walk away. And what's really simply, you know, taking what was done in the industrial model and digitizing it, such as digital worksheets or everyone doing the same PowerPoint presentation, for example, or taking an old device such as a Scantron and digitizing that.
Well, you're describing an interesting evolution, and I'm wondering whether I can, in my experience, I will say, I think I can point to a moment where the school that I last worked in full time made that transition where the school as an institution went from, well, we've got all this stuff, we're not sure what we're going to do with it, to really understanding and integrating all of this, you know, technology and what technology can empower teachers and students to do into every classroom in a thorough way. And I'm sort of wondering whether did you ever experience those moments where suddenly one day the school gets it?
I don't know if I'd go so far to say as the school gets it, but I'd say, you know, pockets of teachers get it. And one challenge is oftentimes, you know, if I were to say a school gets it, it would be the leadership of a school, because, you know, it's typically the leadership that goes to NEIS or the conferences or gets exposed to the ideas of the deep thinkers, whereas the teachers are just trying to get through the day of their four or five classes. That they're getting through, and the administrator comes back and says, this is terrific. We're all going to do design thinking. And the teacher's going, what? You know, and what's going away? But as pockets of teachers get excited about something, and those teachers share that with their colleagues teachers see what the students are doing in that other teacher's class and see how excited those students are and how the learning is improving, you know, that's where the rubber hits the road and the shift begins to happen.
I think that's really interesting. And you referenced the NAIS annual conference just then, and I know that you were on the National Association of Independent Schools Innovation Task Force for a pretty long time, and I'll just sort of share again my personal observation here is that at some point, and it was kind of after the crash of 2008, and I can't remember what year the annual conference was in New York City. At that one conference in New York, I think Sir Ken Robinson was in the program, and people really began to understand that we needed to start making some changes in the way the schools worked. And Pat Bassett was a great kind of cheerleader for change. And I think at that point, a lot of schools didn't necessarily understand the ways that they could evolve forward. There wasn't a path. There was just this kind of drumbeat to make some innovation happen in your school. And so I'm sort of wondering, you know, there's the NAIS Innovation Task Force, and that must have been really interesting. And sort of, what was that like for you? And whether, you know, did you feel as though, I mean, did that work start out as feeling as though it was kind of countercultural, going against the flow, and then change? Because certainly innovation is now a big part of the NAIS message, and I think they're doing a great job of beginning to figure out how to support programming as well.
You know, it from the personal level, it was a great experience because I had an opportunity to work both, you know, asynchronously, remotely, synchronously, face-to-face with an incredibly talented team of colleagues. And we could discuss innovation best practices, come up with some white papers to share, see how member schools were addressing the shifts taking place in learning and in the world around us. But, you know, as to the flow question, you know, whether it was countercultural or not, it really depends on the school and the culture. You know, at some schools, you know, unfortunately, the minority of them, you know, innovation is the flow or goes with the flow. And, mm-hmm. and you and I would know who those schools are, as well the listeners. But at many schools, it's to some extent countercultural. The schools know they need to innovate. You know, the famous quote, you know, culture eating innovation for lunch is out there. But, you know, having the team of volunteers that was the innovation task force for many years, I think helped lay the ground for the, you know, the terrific work. You know, NAIS now has Tim Fish and Kawhi and others, Jefferson Burnett. And Donna's leadership, I think you're right. I think, I know they're going to be reaching out to former members of the task force and others as well as projects come up. You know, it's not really an option anymore. We have to innovate, you know, for sustainability, and we have to do it for the kids. Even more importantly. So I think many of us will continue to help NAIS in their work in that regard.
Now, I'm going to ask a question which is really kind of selfish because it relates to something I'm going to sort of address in more detail a little bit later on, and that has to do with the work the Independent Curriculum Group is trying to do, because I think in a lot of ways our schools, our partner schools, are all trying to figure out where to go, what their own path forward is, how they figure that out for themselves. And one of the ways that the Independent Curriculum Group can be helpful, I like to think, is in putting people together and sort of creating collaborations and maybe even little collaborative think tanks on various topics. So I'm wondering, who set the agenda, or how did the agenda for the Innovation Task Force evolve? Because if it's a good idea, I want to grab it for the ICG.
Sure. Well, you know, before Kawhi was on board, Jenny Voorhees, you know, at Asidwell was kind of putting that together. She may have been working with some contacts at NAIS or on her own, you know, because of her proximity to NAIS. And then really Kawhi.
I'm going to jump in and say that's Kawhi Lay, who is part of the innovation group at NAIS.
And, right. Yeah. You know, she was doing that, you know, for the duration of when we were together, and then, you know, later in partnership with Jefferson Burnett and Tim Fish in that regard. But, you know, collaborative task force sounds like a terrific idea, you know, for us to be to have some people to partner with and to get away from some of the insular things that can happen when one's not partnering with other like schools.
Well, that's my dream. So my question then is, how could the ICG be supporting the work you're doing at Trinity Valley School and the work of other folks? Give me some ideas here, because I'm eager to put together programs that really help and support our schools.
You know, I think telling stories of putting together panels of people who are doing similar things, because if people are having similar initiatives and they can have conversations together about what's worked, what hasn't worked, because, again, they're typically just looking inside of their school. But especially if we can find, similar schools of similar size, similar age, even if they're in different parts of the country, people can pay attention to the cultural differences in that regard. But I think the similarities will outweigh the differences. I think the road short workshops you guys do are terrific. Peter, it would be nice to see some in Texas sometime. I think those opportunities, with the technology to even have synchronous conversations online, that was a technique that we leveraged frequently with the innovation task force. There are many tools out there where you can actually have a conversation between, you don't want to get too large, but you could have easily 8 to 10 people, maybe one or two more. I wouldn't get much larger than that, having a synchronous conversation around the topic, and that can be helpful.
Those all sound like great ideas, and some of them are things that we're working on, and some of them are ideas that I now have to figure out how to make happen. So I really appreciate that. I think we have access to all these tools as an organization. So partner podcast listeners, be ready for what's coming down the road. Well, Larry Kahn, I want to thank you so much for your time today, and more importantly, just thank you for the work you're doing at Trinity Valley School to support, promote, and enact the principles of independent curriculum. I think the best thing about the principles of independent curriculum, when I see them in schools, is that they are being put into the reality of the school's teaching and learning environment without any kind of a prescription. Nobody said, oh, here are the principles, let's do this. I'm way more excited when I find schools that are doing the kind of work that we think represents the best of independent curriculum without anybody having told anybody that they needed to do it that way. And it seems like you and Trinity Valley are in that place in a great way. So, and just to remind listeners, we're going to be posting Larry's contact information along with a pressy of this podcast on the Independent Curriculum Group website. And probably by the end of this week, with a little luck, so it should be up by the 5th or 6th of August, so that those of you who have been engaged and inspired can follow up with your own questions, ideas, and resources, and please feel free to contact Larry and feel free to contact me. I've probably got more time than Larry does, because he works in a school full time, and as all of us know, that can eat a fair amount of time and energy. So Larry, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. This was a terrific conversation. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. And so, listeners, this ends today's Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. And I bid farewell to our guest, Larry Kahn of Trinity Valley School, and to you. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to this Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao, Executive Director of the ICG, hoping that you will listen to the entire ICG Partner Podcast series, and wishing you all the best in your own journey toward the future of education.